And this morning, we welcome workforce consultant Phil Quigley. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Rob and John. Thanks so much for having me, and happy Friday to you.
Okay,
right
thank
back
you.
At you. Yeah. All right. So let's get right down to our continuation of our series, Winning in the Workplace. And you have always taken the position that if we're going to win as a business, we have to have engaged employees.
Well, that's so true. There's an old phrase. I think the CEO of Campbell's Soup once said, if you're going to win in the marketplace, you have to win first in the workplace.
Is that
keeping
Phil?
People involved and fired up and focused on what they've got to do? Especially difficult now, of course, because so many people are working remotely. Thank you very much, COVID-19, or in some cases, reduced working hours. So keeping them fired up and focused is a challenge for just about everybody in the workplace right now.
Is that guy at Campbell's, is that the same guy who said, good?
I think he's still saying that, yes.
Okay.
He's actually a good Scotchman.
All right.
I think he drinks a lot of Scotch broth with Campbell's too.
Campbell's Scotch, okay, yeah. All right, so let's get right down into being getting our people engaged in what we're doing. First of all, tell us, what do you mean by being engaged?
Well, thanks for that question, because everybody's been talking about that for a long, long time. It's not new. In fact, it used to be kind of a code word for getting people to work harder. But really, I think the definition would be an engaged person is somebody who is, I guess, enthusiastic and completely immersed in the work. They love what they do. A common trait would be that they care about the future of the company. They care about the business, and they're more than willing to put in added efforts. They go the extra mile. And I think you see this with certain organizations where people are fired up about what they do. I think companies like Patagonia and companies like, Zappos, the shoe company, good examples of people where leaders lead from the front, but they care about their people, and they're totally involved in what the activities are day-to-day of their employees. So it's really all about kind of unleashing energy. It's kind of interesting because people say, well, to get people engaged, we got to motivate them, and we got to inspire them, and we've got to incentivize them and pay them extra money. And the truth is that's not true at all. The facts are, and I found this from my experience, that people want to be engaged. They already care about the organization, and the key is to find ways to express their talents creatively. So I can't tell you how many times when I've given a workshop or taught a class at college, people come up at the end of the class and say, you know, I wish my boss would give me something meaningful to do, something important to do. They don't feel that they're getting adequate guidance. They don't think they're getting the work that gives them a chance to express their talents freely. People really want to be engaged. The key is, I think, to remove some of the demotivators from the workplace and allow people to express their talents creatively. So I think that's the key now. People want to be engaged, I find, and we often find ways to suppress that engagement by too many meetings or too many Zoom calls. It gets to be a hassle after a while.
Yeah, I worked for a company that, they bought the radio station. We were number one in the market, and then they had something that was kind of like McDonald's University that I had to go to.
Sure.
To learn the company culture. And I said, they said, what do you need? And I said, I need a fireman to put out fires back there while I'm sitting here in this meeting, you know. Anyway, it's just kind of company culture, I guess.
Well, and the culture, by the way, is influenced, of course, by the leadership. The CEO or the company president or the senior manager really sets the pace. He or she is the one that kind of sets the agenda for the organization. And if the company really works to include people and trust them, I think the magic ingredient in building a culture that you mentioned before is how do you create trust and confidence in that workforce? And the real tool is to have the senior leaders kind of setting the pace in that regard. And I can remember years ago when I was with Yahoo, we had a new CEO come aboard, Terry Semel, who came from the movie business. He'd been with Warner Communications and Warner Brothers Pictures. He worked with people like Tom Cruise and so he was really well equipped to take on the role of being a CEO. He came from a highly structured environment, He walks into the first day at work, and he comes in, by the way, in a limousine, chauffeured limousine, to take over the new role as the CEO of Yahoo. And Yahoo at that point had been a pretty hang-loose culture. You know, it was kind of like flip-flops and torn jeans to work every day. He walks up to the receptionist, and he says, well, you know, and she says to him, well, good morning, Terry. Welcome to Yahoo. And he said, it's Mr. Semmel. So how long do you think it got for the word to change, run around that campus that there was a new sheriff in town? And almost immediately, the culture came from one of inclusion and vibrance and energy to one where it was much more highly stratified and highly structured. So the CEOs, the leaders, have a marked impact on engagement and the company's culture.
Well, what happens? Let's take it on the other side. What happens when our employees are not engaged?
Well, that's easy to see. An interesting study by Deloitte and Touche last year, 2019, they did a study of about 1,300 companies around the world. And based on that study, they came to the conclusion that 73% of the employees admit they're not fully engaged at work. Almost half of them plan to leave that firm in the next 18 months. And 80% would leave for a more reputable organization. And what happens when companies don't have engaged employees, the people check out. And things, bad things happen when that happens. A good example would be Boeing. When key executives ignored the warnings from the systems engineers about the problems on the 737 MAX 8. They ignored those warnings. The employees did not feel confident in talking to the senior leaders. There wasn't a level of trust and confidence that either the boss had on the engineers or the engineers had on their bosses. And as a consequence of that, we know the results of that. We're still struggling to get that 737 MAX 8 in the air again. Another example would, of course, be VW. Several years ago, when they cheated on the software that would mask the EPA, the smog emissions. And what happened was that, again, engineers knew what to do to mask to create a car that was smog free. But because the VW people, the senior leadership, wanted to get the car out the door quickly, they obviously violated the EPA regulations. They got fined heavily, billions of dollars. And it all laid back to the fact that the engaged employees did not get a chance to express their views and their feelings to the senior leaders. So engagement really means, how do I keep the energy going in the organization rather than suppress it? What can we do to encourage employees to get involved, to make their maximum contributions? And the key is, most of them want to do it anyway. It's not a secret.
Our guest is workforce consultant Phil Quigley. So, Phil, let's dive into this. This COVID-19 doesn't seem to want to go away anytime soon. So how are we going to take this monkey wrench out?
Well, it's a great question because so many companies right now are struggling with that. I talked to some companies that I've worked with in the past about this very issue, some of the companies in California and in other parts of the country, as well as in India. And I asked them, what are you doing right now to keep people engaged, especially in the time of COVID, when people are, I think the word somebody used was FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which seems to accompany a lot of people when they come to work. They're concerned about the duration of their work, whether the job is going to be there for them. And also, if so many people are not working these days, the workload falls on the people who actually show up to work. So I think the most important thing that companies can do is to communicate. Everybody knows that's important to do, but clearly, crisply, and frequently. It could be something like a town hall that everybody tunes into on a weekly or biweekly basis. Be passionate about the work that you have. I mean, good leaders demonstrate their expertise by showing up every day, by literally caring about their employees. And that could mean a phone call if they're at work, simply walking by their cube and saying, how's it going? What can we do to make your work a little bit more exciting here? People want to be pulled. They want to have a chance to contribute. So you can pull employees for new ideas and suggestions and concerns. Some of the companies that I've worked with are finding ways to reach out to their employees by doing something a little bit unique. One company has a book club that they've just opened up. They sent out a book, one of the new books, I think it was called Team of Teams. It's by Stanley McChrystal, who was the former Special Forces and SEAL commander, who wrote a book about leadership. And it was all about what he did against, you know, to keep his people fired up under extremely dire circumstances. He sent the book out to all the employees, and they're going to read it, and they're going to get together on Zoom and talk about what it means to them. So things like that can be done that are simple, that are cost-effective, to make employees feel part of the team. The key is, how do you make people feel part of a team when they're working remotely or working in such a way that they don't have regular hours? So I think the other thing is, I think, and the key to this is to find meaningful assignments that people can do, and that's called delegation. And that's a key factor. It's been around for thousands of years from the days of the Roman legions, but very often managers don't delegate for a number of reasons. But key, I think, to unlocking potential, most people agree, if you want to get the best out of their employees, enthusiastic participation and a great contribution is to delegate meaningful assignments to them, even in the time of COVID. They can research it on their own or at the office and get that job done very professionally. So things like communication, walking around frequently, talking to people, delegating assignments, finding ways to unleash energy, and find a way to have fun from time to time as well.
Remote fun.
A good example would be a company called Salesforce, a very, very large and very successful company in San Francisco. One thing that they wanted to do is do a little team building, which was very hard to do if you're not in the office or not part of an immediate team. So they hired an executive chef who is renowned on television, has his own TV show, and they figured out that many people wanted to learn how to bake bread. Now, I'm not one of those people that likes to do that. I'd rather buy it at Costco. But some people like to bake bread. So they sent to the employees on this particular team the starter kit for baking bread. I guess it would be some flour and maybe some sugar, a little package. And then on Zoom, the chef showed them step by step how to bake bread. That sounds corny, but things like that are really fun to do. People enjoy that. Another company conducts Pilates classes by Zoom. Sometimes things like financial literacy on Zoom can be very potent. So it's a matter of being a little bit more creative, and I think it starts with really caring about your people. People want to work for bosses and organizations that show that the companies care about them, cares about their welfare, their growth, and their advancement, and cares about them at work, really.
All right. And, I'm kind of the opinion that people who work from home on a regular basis have got to have a little different personality than people who are used to working in a group setting, in groups and committees and cohorts as we do in the workplace. I've said this before. My daughter works from home. She has for years, she is a self-starter. She's independent in her thinking, and she's a self-starter. And they set her up with the tools that she needed to do that, with super high-speed internet and even computers that really work, and systems that are super
secure.
Secure, yeah. And I mean, they really did take care of her and created this this almost an office-like situation in her home, and it works very well for her. But not everybody can work with that. A lot of people have got to be social. You know, we have people in our own building here who simply have to. We've got offices for everybody now, and everybody walks up and down the halls and talks to people. What if we couldn't do that if working from home, even temporarily? It's a whole different mindset.
I think that's a great catch, John. The company that employs your daughter obviously cares very much about setting up the proper infrastructure for her, and obviously wanted to take care of her and make sure that she felt productive, and she obviously loves to do that. On the other hand, there are people that much prefer coming into the office and socializing and having coffee with their colleagues. And then those informal meetings that people have over in the hallway about a question or an issue, so much gets solved informally. And the culture then is one of, how do we keep people involved and concerned and engaged when we're working remotely? The key, I think, is to kind of set it up in advance. To make sure that when you tell people that we're going to start working remotely, here's what we're going to do for you to make this thing as productive as we can. And then perhaps from time to time, we might have a COVID meeting where people get together online, or better yet, if possible, to meet in person at the office, maintaining the appropriate physical distance, of course. But it's a real challenge for companies. a lot of people much prefer working collaboratively, and I think I do as well, and I think many folks do. The record seems to be that most people who work at home now seem to like it. After a while, they've gotten used to it. They've gotten used to be able to setting their own hours. They don't have to worry about commuting or parking. They can wear whatever they want or whatever they don't want to do. They can grab coffee whenever they want to. It becomes something that you get used to. I think most people are good enough and resilient enough to get used to that after a period of time. They miss the social aspect of it, of course, but there are so many other pluses that outweigh that.
Well, I can fall asleep in meetings and nobody knows it.
Exactly.
John is very unresponsive today.
That's right. Or you can check in a good YouTube clip or watch the Golf Channel and they wouldn't know the difference.
That's right.
Well, our conversation this morning, always a good one, with Phil Quigley, workplace consultant. And we're kind of focusing on this remote working environment, which is really different for people. When I got married, Phil, my wife worked for a company in San Mateo, California, and she was the first employee that they let work remotely. And she was set up with a computer and everything at home. And she felt guilty walking down the hallway to put the clothes from the washer into the dryer, you know, because she was so driven productive. Now, at the same time, you know, you got to give yourself permission to multitask in this environment, do you not?
I think I love the story about the lady in in San Mateo working remotely, among the first people to do that. That used to be a real perk, the idea of, boy, I get to work from home occasionally. And I remember at Yahoo, when they canceled that policy, it became almost a cause for rebellion. I think when the new Melissa Meyer came in from Google to take over the CEO role at Yahoo, he canceled immediately the work from home program, and people were up in arms about it. On the other hand, there are companies, I think, that are doing it well and making sure that people enjoy the possibility of working from home. A company that I've worked with back there called Risk Management Systems, which is in Hayward, California, for example, they were concerned that people working from home often would sometimes get into bad eating habits. I mean, it's easy to kind of nosh on stuff when you're at your keyboard, and people were concerned about that. So what they did was they hired a food scientist to go online with a virtual daily cast, talking about a 5-minute webcast about what you can do to eat safely and healthily at home. So it was kind of a fun thing to do. Here's some healthy eating habits. And people love that kind of stuff. It shows that the company cares about them. Another company, Mutual of Omaha, a huge insurance company, they do all of their onboarding, hiring new people online now. It's all virtual because they're spread out across the country. They do sales training over the line, virtually, and that works very, very well. Another company that I've worked with likes to show videos, and they had a great video called 12 Angry Men. They showed their employees virtually, and then they had a post-movie discussion about the implication of leadership and decision-making based on that movie. So they're finding creative ways to reach out to people, and there's really no limit to what you can do to involve folks, because people really want to be involved. It's difficult to do virtually, of course, but on the other hand, there are so many wins because people have find it very convenient to work from home. And again, it's cost-effective because people can get, and they can measure the output a little bit more creatively.
Okay,
the idea of delegating tasks to people, because that way they're on their own and they can complete it. It's measurable and it's a smart decision to make.
Okay. Always a great conversation with you, Phil. One parting question, just a 30-second answer. Do these companies that are hiring online, do they ever meet these employees face-to-face, or is it just a totally virtual, okay, you're hired, and all done remotely?
Well, right now it's only virtual, but they have plans at some point when things ease up a little bit to have, you know, various town hall meetings where people get together and have a real live face-to-face meeting. But you're right, it's difficult, but companies are finding ways to do it. Typically right now they're hiring virtually and meeting people virtually and eventually hoping to meet them in person at one of the office facilities.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Boy, Phil, thank you so much. Always a great conversation. Workforce consultant Phil Quigley.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend, and thanks for including me.
Yeah, same to you.